The topic of tonight's talk is the mind as a tool for what? What can the mind be a tool for? Well, we've had some experience of what the mind is good for over these past few days. We've seen the craziness of this thing we call our mind. We've seen this box up here, and we've experienced how out of control it is, like a crazy monkey jumping from tree to tree, from branch to branch, and how it will not obey the simplest instruction of just staying with the breath. What can be so difficult about it? And yet, now, after 7 days here, we're not talking theory, we're talking from our very personal experience. It's very difficult. Still, the mind is good for things. We also maybe have discovered that the mind is very good for remembering and for planning. I find it quite funny how before the retreat we sit at home with our friends over a cup of coffee and we fantasize about the retreat. Oh, just how soon can I get to the retreat and be quiet and have some peace of mind and be far away from all this craziness of this life. And then we come to the retreat and guess what? We sit here and fantasize, oh, when can we go back and have a cup of coffee with our friends? So what is the mind good for? The mind, especially in modern society, has achieved many great achievements. We have developed great technology. We have modern medicine. We have all kinds of technological equipment and gadgets to make our life more comfortable. We have air condition. We have electricity. This is all the creation of the mind. We have internet. The mind has even brought us to the moon. And most of all, the mind has invented the SMS. How would we live in without SMS? This is all the creation of the mind. And the mind is really what makes the difference between us and animals. Because what is the element, what is the one ingredient that we have that animals do not? It's the mind. Yet, we shouldn't feel so superior about it, because animals have many things we don't have. Like, you know, you probably have seen birds flying, migrating for hundreds and thousands of miles from one end of the globe to another. And how do they know the way? And you also probably have seen them, they're going in this structure. And they haven't taken courses in college in what you call it, aerodynamic structure. And yet they know. And they have, they have this rule that, I don't even know what to call it, that the bird up at the front, at the top of this arrow, this bird is getting most of the wind and the air and is getting very tired. After a while, it goes to the back and is replaced by another bird. How do they know this? I mean, obviously they didn't go to college and take courses, and they didn't, you know, all the birds before flighting to the south got together and sat down and said, all right, we have to migrate now, it's time and it's getting cold. All right, who's going to be up front? And after a few miles, who's going to replace? I mean, this is what we do. We would do if we had to do this. And they just do it. And, you know, we don't know how they do it. Now, science tells us, you know, science has all the answers. And science tells us the answer to how they do it. instinct. In other words, the science cannot say that we have this, we don't have the slightest idea how they do. They have capacities, they have ways that we don't have. Yes, we have the mind, but we don't have what they have. And imagine a pilot in an airplane going from New York to Tel Aviv and not having, you know, all the machshirim, all the equipment to tell it, and all the communication with Migdal HaPikuach, how to go, where to go. Can you imagine someone who's been going to Tel Aviv and New York many, many times, back and forth? Why can't they just go by instinct? Or ants, you know. Ants, they have this incredible communal life that they are born and they just know what to do and they just know it. And when we see an ant in our kitchen, you know, the first reaction is, oh no, oh, what? How can I get rid of it in Buddhist ways now without harming it? But the sooner the better to usher it outside. And I suggest next time we see an ant, we say, hey sister, teach me. How do you live such communal life? I mean, we humans, we are so superior, we have these great minds, and we are communities fight with each other. And within the same community also, I mean, just look at our community in Israel. Without the external fights, the internal fights, they have something we don't have. So we don't know what they have, but we have the mind. And with that also, we are just also beginning to know what we have. We don't always know what the mind is, but here we are beginning to learn about it. And it's good to remember that we are part of this. We don't need to feel superior to animals, but we also don't need to feel inferior. Like Vivek was telling us yesterday, that Buddha said both to feel superior is from the ego, and to feel inferior is also from the ego. We are part of nature. We are part of this intrinsic web, not like the internet, but web like this net of nature. And we are different, but we're also the same. And by the way, usually people quote Kohelet from the Bible, who said, Motar Adam in a Behema, and this is actually, you can check it up in the Bible, it's not wrong, but it's an incomplete quote, because actually Kohelet said, Motar Adam in a Behema, Ayin. Meaning, there is no, we are not separate, we are not different. But anyway, this is a little bit off the topic. And the topic is about the mind. We've been learning, we've been experiencing the mind here for these days. So what is the mind a tool for? The mind is a tool for transformation. The mind is a great tool for liberation. Now, maybe some of you think, or your first reaction to hearing this word is, not my mind. My mind, well, you know, if you do a lobotomy to my mind, if you cut this off and put the C again, okay, I'm ready for liberation. But actually, in fact, the Buddha said that the mind, not only the mind is a tool for transformation, for liberation, but it's the greatest tool. In fact, it's what takes us there. It's the mind is what enables us to make choices, to choose to come to this retreat. It's a decision you all made. For several years, I lived with my guru, with my master, and in a spiritual community. And he used to say that we have, each person, each human has three levels in us. We have the animal level, which is the instinctual level, the survival level, the bodily level, the need to survive, all the functions of the body and of the survival and of the procreation is all on the animal level that is keeping us alive, keeping the species, every species. The procreation is one of the most important evolutionary drive to keep the species alive. So that's the animal level, and then we have the human level, which is what we have art and culture and books and poetry, appreciation for beauty, internet. All this is on our human level. But, he said, we also, each one of us, have in us the potential to go beyond just the human level to the divine. And this is, in fact, what we have been doing this week here. This is the choice that we've made to come here and cultivate this seed, this potential. So the mind is not just this crazy monkey jumping from here to there. And it's not just this Kalgat Nazi, this terrorist that terrorizes us. That sometimes it feels like this is what the mind is. Yes, it is the nature of the mind to be restless. And it is the nature of the mind to be foggy and to be full of desire and be full of hate. And when we realize this through experience, like we have been doing, we need to have compassion for the mind. We understand that's the mind's nature. It's not that my mind is bad, my mind is not working right, everybody else's mind is perfect, just my mind is not. That's the nature of the mind. And if someone would have asked us a week ago, what's the nature of the mind, we may have not known how to answer. But now we know from very first-hand personal experience some aspect of the nature of the mind. And also, maybe you have also realized by now, many of you came to me and to Vivek separately and said, my mind is going crazy. Everybody else is sitting here like a Buddha. Everybody else is just total concentration. Only me. I can't concentrate. My mind is going all over the place. I'm 1 minute with a breath and the rest of the time I'm not here. But I think we've all realized by now that this is a very common experience. This is an experience we all share. So it's a universal experience, which means it's not my mind, it's the mind. The mind, it's the nature of the mind. There's a story about a scorpion who wanted to cross the lake. So it went to the turtle and said, turtle, please, take me over, I want to cross the lake. And the turtle said, no, I'm not going to take you because you're going to sting me and I'm going to die. So the scorpion said, no, please, I promise you, I won't sting you, I want to cross the lake. Please take me. So the turtle said, okay, you promise, let's go. So the scorpion hops on the turtle's back and the turtle starts swimming. Somewhere in the middle of the lake, the scorpion stings the turtle. And now, while they're both drowning, the turtle is yelling at the scorpion, look what you did, why did you sting me? Now look, now we're both dying, you promised not to sting, why did you sting me? And the scorpion said, I can't help it, it's my nature. So that's the nature of the mind. And we can fight with it, we can be upset about it, or we can develop compassion for it. Vivek was saying, befriend the mind. Befriend our mind. it's not our enemy. How can we befriend the mind? Well, how do we befriend someone, let's say, someone new comes to the office where we work? Well, if we want to befriend them, we go up to them and we smile. And we say, hi, how are you? How are you doing? How are you feeling? You want to go out for coffee together sometime? So it's the same way with the mind. Really. Hi, how are you doing? How are you today? Oh, now you're restless. Okay. What do you need? Need a hug, maybe? And this is actually what we have been doing here. Trying to befriend our mind. And in the morning, when you wake up, sometimes try to pay attention to the seconds, those first very few seconds. There's some moments there before the mind kicks in. We are awake, yet the mind has not woken up yet. You know, he hasn't heard the bell yet. There's a moment there. Try to see if you can catch it. And then the mind kicks in. And, oh, another day. Oh, group meditation. Oh, no. So that's an opportunity to say, Shalom Chaver. Hello, friend. Instead of, oh, no, my mind is attacking me. Oh, hello, friend. Yeah, we've been going together a long way. How are you doing today? So the mind wanders. So what? So it wanders. Let it wander. It's the nature of the mind to wander. It's the nature of the mind to be restless. But when we work with the mind, like we have been doing, the mind also reveals other sides. Because also the nature of the mind is to be calm, is to be bright, is to be spacious and luminous. The mind can be as sharp as a sword that cuts through the fogginess. The same mind. In India, there's a great epos. I don't know if epos is an English word. Epos. Great long story called the Mahabharata. It's probably one of the biggest, the most historical and cultural epos in the world. And it's made up of many stories. It's a great book. I really recommend it. We have it in Hebrew also. And if any of you are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is a chapter within the Mahabharata. And in the Mahabharata, there is a character, one of the main characters, a prince called Yudhishthira. And Yudhishthira is a very wise, very son of Dharma prince. And he happens to be wandering in the forest, and he comes to a lake, and he sees his four brothers are lying there dead. And he says, who killed my brothers? My brothers are the greatest warriors, and they're strong and brave. Who could have killed them? Who could overcome them? And he reaches the lake. He wants to drink. And the lake says, do not drink. And if you, without answering my questions, and if you drink without answering the questions, you'll be dead like your brothers. I killed your brothers because they wouldn't answer my questions. But if you'll answer my questions right, if I'll be pleased with your answers, then I'll bring your brothers back to life. So Yudhishthira says, all right. So the lake asks him a series of many, many, many questions. Very, very interesting, very fascinating. I really recommend it. But anyway, one of the questions, and of course Yudhishthira, just so you not to keep you in suspense, of course he answers them all right, and his brothers are alive, so we can all relax. But one of the questions is, what is faster than the wind? Of course, if it was these days, I imagine the question would have been, what is faster than the speed of light? Although, because, you know, the speed of light is considered the fastest thing exists, you know, part of Einstein's theory of relativity. People usually say, according to Hasid, Einstein said everything is relative. This is also an incomplete, because Einstein said everything is relative except for the speed of light. The speed of light cannot be relative, or the whole theory of relativity will collapse. But anyway, the question is, what is faster than the speed than the wind? And Yudhishthira answers what you probably can guess. He said, the mind. And I dare say that the mind is faster than the speed of light. But if any of you is a scientist and you disagree, then never mind. I take it back. But the mind is so fast. In one split of a second, we can be in India, bathing in the Ganga. And in a split of a second, we can be in the Sahara Desert, sweating on a camel. Or in a split second, we can be back in our childhood, 30, 20 years ago. There is no way to measure the capacity of the mind. The mind needs to be tamed, like a wild animal. And in fact, in the tradition, the mind is compared to a wild bull, the show, peri. And in the tradition, in one of the Buddhist traditions, there is a description of how the yogi, the practitioner, tames the wild bull and then rides it. The bull can take us to our destiny. So it's not, with the bull, it's not like, okay, we tame the bull and then we tie it to the noose and then we go on to our destiny without it. The bull stays home. No. The tradition describes we take control over the bull, we tame it, and then we ride on top of it, and it takes us to our destination. And in a similar way, the mind, when it's purified, like Vivek is saying, when it's bright and spacious and luminous, heart, it can, and it will, and it is taking us to our destiny. When we make the great leap, we don't leave the mind behind. The Buddha did not leave his mind behind. But his mind was clear. His mind was bright, luminous, spacious and sharp. Here, and oftentimes I think you've also noticed that when the mind is quiet, also the body suddenly is not so disturbing, is not so hurting. But many times we sit here and the knee really hurts, or the arm, there's a scratch, it's really itching. And this reminds me of a time Christopher Titmus is a great, great Vipassana teacher and Tovanath friend from England. He comes here very many times for many years, and he teaches. And he told us that in one of the retreats in India, they were sitting in some tent outside, but he was sitting in the front, and everybody was sitting in rows like this, and a cobra snake came in and was like this, you know, in front of one of the sitters, up front. So do you think that person meditating there said, oh, my knee is really hurting, or my arm is itching? No, he was sitting there, he didn't make a move. And all, I imagine, all he could think about was, I want to live. Once came to a master and said, Master, when will I be enlightened? When will I be liberated? The master didn't answer. After a while, they went down to the river to bathe. Suddenly, the master pushed down the head of the student under the water and kept it under the water. A minute passed, 2 minutes passed, 3 minutes passed. Finally, the master let the student come, gasping for air. And the master said, tell me, when you're under the water, were you thinking about your job? The student said, no, I wasn't thinking about my job. Were you thinking about your wife? No, I wasn't thinking about my wife. Were you thinking about your children? No, I wasn't even thinking about my children. So what were you thinking about? He said, I was thinking about air. I wanted air. So the master said, the moment you want liberation, in the same way you wanted air, liberation will come. With a quote from a very surprising source, from Kafka. We can find Dharma anywhere. He says, you do not need to leave your room. I need to make sure I don't. You do not need to leave the room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Do not even wait. Be quite still and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet.